Hello and welcome to the Sonic Cinema Podcast. My name is Brian Scuttle. Thank you for joining me at www.sonic-cinema.com as well as the Sonic Cinema Podcast YouTube channel. Click subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it is YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find the Sonic Cinema Podcast, and I hope you continue to enjoy it. You can also check me out at patreon.com/sonic cinema. There you will find exclusive deep dives, Oscar discussion, film festival, short film discussion, and a lot more, as well as Life Soundtrack and Leaving the Collection whenever I get around to doing something for those. And that is at patreon.com/sonic cinema. So this episode is, we're going to be talking about, in particular, we're going to be talking about a couple of movies that I've always really liked since the 90s that I really wanted to touch on, especially since one of them is turning 30 this year. And that is the double bill of Jack Ryan films that Harrison Ford made, Patriot Games in 1992 and Clear and Present Danger in 1994. Join me to discuss those films, as well as maybe some other Jack Ryan discussions, is a fellow film critic. He's been on the pod before. Please welcome back to the podcast, Kevin Thomas. Kevin, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I remember, my mother, my grandfather, and I, we went to go see Patriot Games in theaters together, and I know I really loved it. It was my first real experience with Tom Clancy in terms of his type of political thriller that he was interested in making in his novels. I hadn't seen Hunt for Red October. I think I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but I'd never seen the entire thing. And then, so a couple of years later, when Clear and Present Danger came out, it was really exciting to see Harrison Ford return to the character of Jack Ryan. And I've always been a big fan of these movies. Kevin, how did you come across these movies for the first time?
Okay, so I'm pretty sure my first experience with the Jack Ryan movies was The Sum of All Fears. Mm-hmm. the Ben Affleck reboot that they tried. They used to show it on TV all the time in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I would DVR it because that Ben Affleck guy from the Daredevil movie you like is in it, so it must be good. And it was one of those things where when I saw it when I was like 12 or 13, I was too young to get into it. And then when I saw it again when I was older, I liked it more because I could, you know, follow and understand it. I think I saw The Hunt for October for the first time in high school, and I really liked it for the, I really liked it for kind of the pacing of it. This is very, it's, I think it's, I really like the tense atmosphere of it. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean Connery is the lead of that thing, not the Jack Ryan character, which I was fine with because Marco Ramius is very interesting and there's all the tension on the ship about who the Russian agent is. I really enjoyed that. I remember not really digging that the third act goes into more like action stuff because I thought the tension was supposed to be so great. I'm like, oh, do we really, it wasn't bad. I was like, oh, do we really need this to end in a gunfight when so much of this is really good tension and conversations and just, you know, all of that. And so I remember when I saw Patriot Games soon after, the first time I saw it, I didn't like it as much as Red October because it does have a very different sort of style to it. I think the pacing is a lot faster in that, and Harrison Ford plays Jack Ryan in a very different way than Alec Baldwin did. So that definitely, that kind of caught me off guard a little bit the first time I saw it. But on subsequent viewings, I've grown to appreciate it. It's like, oh, no, it's this series is not concerned so much with like continuity at all. They're all just very like standalones, which I like.
Yeah.
And as a Harrison Ford action, or not even action movie, it's a Harrison Ford led thriller, I think Patriot Games is, I really like it because of the focus it has on him as a family man. I like how personal the story is for him. Like focusing so much on his family and how closely they're tied into that story is the biggest strength of it for me. And the action in it, I think, is very, I like how the violence is portrayed very realistically and it's terrifying. It's not really entertaining. Like, you're not meant to cheer at it, but it does its job of making you afraid for their lives.
Yeah.
And also, Samuel Jackson pops up for like three scenes and you're like, oh, it's him. Oh, before he was super famous. Just the guy who gets Jack Ryan a medal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when I was rewatching it recently, when I was rewatching Patriot Games recently, I noticed how much I liked just the family story, how it's very small and it's very small scale and very personal, focused on him just as, and this is what Harrison Ford was cast for a lot, just like as this family man who's in over his head trying to fight against, you know, whoever the bad guy is. Like, that's what he spent almost all of the 90s doing. And then, you know, and then What Lies Beneath just flipped that to great effect. But it was like, but yeah, like, I think he's a really awesome fit for these, for both of these movies, because he's able to just come across as a regular person in the middle of this, of all these like assassination attempts and government conspiracies and what have you. He's able to ground it for us. So it doesn't become, it never, these don't feel, they're fiction obviously, but they don't feel stupid or absurd because of how they're executed. Like, okay, exaggerated, yes, but not like, the suspension of disbelief is fully in place. Like, it doesn't ask you to stretch it too much.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, I think one of the things that's really interesting about Tom Clancy's thrillers, especially when they're brought to the screen, I think what makes them interesting is the fact that action does kind of almost get in the way of what we're most interested in with these movies. Like, we get interested in the political aspects. We get interested in the interactions between the characters, the motivations between the characters, to where action sequences almost feel very perfunctory and not particularly interesting compared to what we've seen throughout the rest of the film. You mentioned Hunt for October, and I think that's a great example. I think Patriot Games is a great example as well, where there are certainly action sequences that take place throughout the rest of the movie, but I think especially in the third act there, it really gets silly. And it almost dulls what we're wanting out of that.
Climax. I agree. The third act of Patriot Games is its weakest part, because that's where it feels the most to me like a standard action movie, whereas the rest of it, again, like, the action had been done in a way of like, oh, this is terrifying. Like, oh, his wife and child are about might die. It's like, oh, this is scary. Whereas in the third act of it, it just feels like, oh, he needs to go around the house and it's storming outside and kill the bad guys. And I'm like, there's a way to make that setup terrifying too. Like it should be. You're at your house. You have people over. You know, the power's out. It's storming outside. These people who have tried to take your life several times have found your home. Like that should be just as terrifying as the rest of it. But the way that they do it, it feels like somebody said, we need to end this like a big action movie, but the movie hasn't really been an action movie yet. We need to end it like an action movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not, I don't know. It's not badly done. It's just not, it just doesn't feel in keeping with the rest of the movie to me as much.
Yeah.
And it makes it, yeah, I mean, the story has to end with a confrontation between them, like a violent confrontation. That's what it's been building up to the entire time. I just wish they could have, I don't know if that's how the book ends. And so they was following the book or if they made adaptational changes to it. But yeah, the third act of Patriot Games is kind of where it just falls off a little bit for me.
Yeah.
Whereas Clear and Present Danger, weirdly, I think it pulls off the big third act action thing a lot better.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with that. And and it's funny because of the fact that I really like the house. I really like the stuff in the house in the third act of Patriot Games.
Yeah.
It's basically when they're in speedboats. In a storm at the end.
That's what I was referring to. The speed, like the house itself. The speedboat. Yeah, the speedboat stuff is what I meant. Like, yeah, the stuff in the house is fine. The speedboat part specifically is what I was referring to, where I'm like, this feels too much like a traditional action movie that doesn't fit with everything else. But yeah, the stuff in the house itself, like all the tension is still in that section. And then he's got the gun people in his house. It's like, oh, we're still keeping it in a character place, and then bring out the speedboats.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, okay, I guess we're doing this now. But yeah, the fact that they spend so much time building him up as a family man and taking like quiet moments after every instance of violence to just kind of let the emotional impact of that sink in with us and him.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that really makes it hit harder for me. Cause I'm like, oh no, where's she gonna, and we're taking this seriously. It's fun, yes, and there are a few lines of, you know, levity, I guess, but it's not like, you know, I appreciate that they're making they want us to be emotionally invested in what's going on with him and his family. On the negative end of it, I think that at the beginning of it, when Sean Bean's brother is murdered, I feel like the movie wants us to feel sympathy for him in that moment and then never again attempts that.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird to me if you're going to put something like that in there. Like, I'm not going to feel bad for the terrorist. Like,
no.
You, why'd you even try to do that? Like,
I mean, this is where, I mean, cause I know Tom Clancy was not particularly happy with this adaptation of Patriot Games. When he saw Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan in Hunt for October, it seemed to be closer to what his vision of Ryan was. Then
okay.
I mean, this basically looks, you know, what we get in Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger is basically Harrison Ford as Jack Ryan, and he's bringing the swagger that we're familiar with Harrison Ford bringing into the role. Now, I know what they in Clear and Present Danger, they got a little bit. I know Patriot Games, because of the political aspects of the movie, because it deals with the IRA, some very, very tense modern politics at the time that is harder to really wrap your head around than what we saw in the, as far as the Cold War and Hunt for October versus, you know, the drug cartels in Clear and Present Danger, you know, so I think it was harder for the movie to get into the politics of that as clearly as maybe it could have been.
Yeah. And I think they have a noble stab at doing it. Like, they don't, like, they do a good job of establishing that there is, you know, like, that the government is aware of the IRA and sort of the ping-ponging around of how much do we acknowledge them, or did they do it, or did they not. Like, they do a good job of building tension between Jack and the, like, the political spokesman who's like, oh, well, they didn't. So, like, no, they didn't. They always take credit for what they did, and they didn't, you know, they didn't say that they did it, so we're not going to accuse them of doing it. Like, they, I got a good sense of, like, okay, this is a bunch of, like, kind of passing the ball back and forth between things. So the political aspect of the story is not ignored.
Yeah.
I just think that it's definitely there. Like, it's a political thriller, but it's like, it felt like something that probably was delved into deeper in the original book than it is in this. For Clear and Present Danger, it's almost as if they looked at Patriot Games and said people complained that the political element wasn't really explored enough. And so a lot of Clear and Present Danger is about people standing around in the White House making political moves of, like,
yeah,
all right, we're gonna send a team over here and we're gonna make sure it's on my computer, and we're not going to, you know, we're gonna tell the president about it, but not so much that it's plausible deniability, and we need to hire a dude to go out here and do it who's morally flexible. It's like, yeah, Clear and Present Danger is so much more focused. I think it's interestingly a lot more of a, it's a lot more of a cynical kind of movie, especially in terms of how it views the, like, the government as a whole, with Jack Ryan being the one, like, Boy Scout of it. And for the story they're telling, I think that's entirely appropriate, because this actor's name, the guy they got to play the main villainous American politician here, I can't believe I forgot his name. He was the guy in the Henry Czerny.
Yeah.
Henry Czerny is one of the greatest blind ball actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just,
oh, he's fantastic in this.
He just from the moment he comes on, I was like, his little like goblinish glasses, I'm like, oh, you're, he just oozes evil in this. And, you know, yeah, like, he's a great love to hate character. And I think he's really good at making sure that he comes across kind of like a chilling, believable person. He's not a maniacal villain. He's a guy who just will go to extreme measures to do what he thinks is right, even if it could bite his government in the butt down the line.
Right.
And again, with the drug cart, as far as the drug cartels, it's like, you know, war on drugs persists, but it's like, I think this is a relatively, like, respectful view of that. Like, they don't do the Breaking Bad thing of, oh, it's in Mexico, let's make everything yellow looking.
Yeah. Well, this was before that was really something that filmmakers did. Like, Steven Soderbergh really started that trend with Traffic.
Yeah, Traffic is like, it's all over that. Every single Benicio del Toro looks like, every single Benicio del Toro in that movie looks like he just stepped out of a you know, a juice box of Capri Sun.
But no, I mean, I think the thing that I really like about Patriot Games is I like the fact that it is a personal, like, very much it. I mean, yes, you kind of wish the political stuff was on better footing, but admittedly, that the politics of, you know, the IRA and, you know, how Ireland and England have, you know, have gone along or haven't gone along over the years. I mean, it's a complicated thing. So, I mean, I guess it makes sense to a certain extent that they would boil it down to kind of a personal back and forth between Ryan and Sean Miller, played by Sean Bean in Patriot Games. And yes. I think with Clear and Present Danger, they do a very good job of, to your point, not portraying the war on drugs in a way that we're familiar with. And I think they also do a really good job of showing us an interesting side of it from the perspective of the drug dealer, and having the main drug dealer be somebody who he's ultimately not a good guy because of what he's doing, but he has a certain degree of morals that his right hand, who's manipulating everything, does not. And we get that paralleled in Washington, where Jack is basically the one trying to do the right thing and trying to do it in the right way, you know, in a way that makes sense to people, but everybody around him is trying to circumvent the system. And I love that dichotomy works so well in that movie.
Yeah, it's honestly kind of a, I didn't realize that until you just mentioned it, but yeah, I don't know if I want to say subtle, because it's not, like, it's, I think it's there, but they don't overplay it.
Yeah.
And it's, again, I think both of these movies respect your intelligence. Like, they don't spoon feed you stuff. And yeah, like the portrayal of the main drug dealer is this, I mean, yeah, he's a bad guy. He's a bad guy because of what he's doing, but he's not, like, again, he feels more grounded in how he's written than I was expecting.
It's not just a stereotype.
No, I don't think that there are any, like, I don't think that there are any, like, stereotypes in either of these movies. Like, they're not all fleshed out, but they're not like, you're a drug dealer, so you must have do X, Y, and Z. Like, no, these are just people doing what they're just people doing what they do. And I think that's, and I appreciate that. It makes it just grounds the story more, so that the stuff that is stretching plausibility is easier to buy. Also, I think I couldn't help thinking, watching Clear and Present Danger, like, so the character that Willem Dafoe plays in here would later be played by Michael B. Jordan in I forgot the name of it, but like Michael B. Jordan, what, it was an Amazon original thing from a couple years ago. I saw it. It was okay.
I can't remember what the name of it was. I know what you're talking about too, but let me look it up right quick. Beyond Remorse?
Yes, that's it. Without Remorse. So yeah, when Willem Dafoe's character showed up, and I just had a flashback to Without Remorse, like, oh, cool. I mean, this, both great actors, both very different ways of playing the character and what their story is. But yeah, for Willem Dafoe's part, I think I remember the first time I saw this. I saw Queen of the Native for the first time like 1 or 2 years ago. And because I'm so used to seeing Willem Dafoe play the bad guy in things, when I saw that he was in it, I thought, oh, this is going to be a showdown between Jack Ryan and him. And then it's really not. Like, seeing Willem Dafoe play a morally gray but more on the side of good-ish guy is still weird to me. Like, he's, I think, really good performance, and I like that he's, I like that he shows, like, he's morally flexible, but still, but only up to a point. Like, the last third of this where it, the last third of this where they're together, I think is really good, because we spent so long putting the pieces on the board and moving them around to get here. And it hasn't overloaded us with action at all. Like, to end in this situation where, yeah, there needs to be action here, because if there's not, it wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, they need to get them. Yeah, they need to get the military guys out of this situation. Government was going to leave them behind so that they wouldn't have to admit to wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just, yeah, like, the fact that that's where it leads, it underscores the movie's, one of the movie's themes about, like, government corruption internally. It's like, this is how far they'll go to not admit that they've messed up.
Yeah.
And luckily, these guys were rescued by Ryan and Willem Dafoe. But I think they did a good job of, like, giving us, like, the action climax without sacrificing its thematic point that's been driving this.
And this one makes more thematic sense, more story-wise sense than the one in Patriot Games. Like, the one in Patriot, the speedboats in Patriot Games just feels very tacked on. This one feels very natural to the way the story unfolds. And I think the thing that makes, you know, it's funny, I think I will always prefer Patriot Games to a certain degree, but I understand why Clear and Present Danger is probably a bit more respected from people. And it's because of the fact that it's going to the, it's essentially doing the same thing with Ford's Jack Ryan that we saw Alec Baldwin's Jack Ryan in Red October, where it's a story that Jack Ryan just happens to be in the middle of, rather than it's a story about him. And I think that's the thing about Patriots Games. As much as I really like it, it's ultimately a Jack Ryan story. It's like, well, no, that's not necessarily what these stories should be. So,
and I mean, I think watching these two back to back was very interesting to me, because I think in terms of, like, from a character perspective, I like Patriot Games a lot more, because it just spends more time on that. Like, if I want to watch the Jack Ryan adventure that's more about, like, the character stuff, I will turn that on. If I want to watch a Jack Ryan movie that I think has a more engaging story for me, then Clear and Present Danger wins out. It they're both very good at what elements they emphasize.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's different. They're similar and different. Like, Philip Noyce directed both of these, and I think he maintains his, you know, the style that he brings to them over the course of both. Yeah. It's very different from what John McTiernan does. It's very different from what Joel Allen Robinson does, and it's quite different from what Kenneth Branagh would do.
Yeah.
But it's like, but yeah, like, these are, but yeah, like, both of them are, I think, because of how the stories are executed, like, you know, it just depends on what you're looking for as a viewer of one of these kind of, like, if you want if you like a smaller story, then Patriot Games is going to be the one I suggest. If you want something with a bit more of a political edge to it, then, you know, with a bit more intrigue, then Clear and Present Danger would be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Philip Noyce, yeah, this was my first, these two movies were my first time experiencing some of his work, and there's still some of his biggest work that I haven't seen, but especially Dead Calm. But as far as his Hollywood stuff, in addition to these movies, he also did Sliver. In between these, he did The Saint, The Bone Collector.
Oh, okay, yeah, The Bone. Okay, yeah, I have the Bone Collector as well. I think that's a pretty solid movie.
Yeah, and Salt is a pretty good movie as well. And in 2002, he also did Rabbit Proof Fence, which was a more Australian production, as well as The Quiet American with Michael Caine.
Caine and Brendan Fraser. A few years ago, I heard, I've known about The Quiet American existing for years, but I've never gotten around to seeing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Michael Caine, I like Brendan Fraser, so I'll get to it eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's well worth checking out. But yeah, I mean, you look at he's really, I think the thing about Noyce that is really good about these movies and what separates his approach from McTiernan's is the fact that he seems to really appreciate the ways in which, for the most part, he appreciates the ways in which action fits into these and the ways and when it doesn't. I mean, I think in Clear and Present Danger, I think arguably the most suspenseful scene in the entire movie is when we have Ritter and Ryan going at one another at their respective computers when Ritter
that scene is both extremely tense and also mildly funny to me simultaneously. Yeah. Because it's really tense because of what's happening and and all the intrigue and tension built up. But it's also really funny because I know it was released in 1994. I know computers were very, very different in 1994. But I'm watching this and I'm going things don't delete like that. They would just be gone. Like you're right. Like it's watching the entire.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those things of like, it's just a piece of the time. So it's not a criticism. It's just things don't work like that anymore. Like yeah. Everything around a computer in this movie. It's like, oh man, no wonder it took so long for you guys to find anything. joking aside, that scene is really great because it's really great not only because of the tension within it, but also what the scene that happens right after it where they're actually like going back and forth at each other about what just happened.
Yeah.
It's like it's like those two scenes really build on each other well. And it just underscores it just really helps underscore the idea of him being like the lone good guy in this situation.
Right.
Against, you know, the government who is in the wrong here.
Yeah.
And I don't think, go ahead.
Well, I mean, one of the things I like in Clear and Present Danger so much is that there is a personal aspect in this movie, and it comes from his mentor James Greer, played by James Earl Jones.
Yeah, that's a really good element of it.
Dying, and I mean, yeah, he comes from the same perspective of right and wrong that Greer does, and the regular politicians, just the people who are more politically minded in this movie, whether it's Harris Yulin as Cutter, Ritter, and then the present, played by Donald Moffat, you know, they are people who are looking at things from a completely different perspective. And that's where the personal aspect comes in with this. And so when after Greer dies, it's like he is the only one who can truly feel like he can do the right thing.
Yeah, and I like that. I really like the relationship between him and Greer and both of these, especially with this one. It, even though he's not in it very much, I think the scenes they have here do a good job of just highlighting how, you know, like the mentor-mentee relationship, like how much he has taught him before he leaves, and that, like, it was one of his final scenes by his bedside where he's like, you know, you spend your entire life doing something, you know, doing this and hoping that you made a positive impact on it. It's like that. Yeah. Like it was a really, it's just a really good use of the character in a small way. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's, I think it does hit a little bit when he dies, not only because of this movie and what's been going on and what it means thematically for this story, but also because we've seen him with Ryan since Red for October. We spent three movies with him. And so we kind of know and like him. And it always sucks when James Earl Jones dies in a movie. The personal element is definitely between the two of them. It's just the B side of this.
Yeah.
Which again, I think for the story that they want to tell is fine. If they had tried to focus this too much on that, they could have lost the wider scope of it, and that would have been a problem. Also, between like Patriot Games and Hocus Pocus and this, Thora Birch had a very intense early 90s.
Yeah.
Like when she showed up, I was like, man, last year, you know, man, you getting shot at by Sean Bean this year. Next year, Beth Midler is going to be trying to suck your soul out. Are you going to be okay?
Well, and at the end of the decade, she was in American Beauty. So it makes a lot of sense, man, that when we see her character in Ghost World, she's so just disaffected with life in general.
I still need to see that.
Oh, so, like, Ghost World is so good.
Forever I knew her as the little girl from Hocus Pocus. Yeah. And so when I saw her in these and American Beauty, especially American Beauty, it was very weird. I'm like, oh, you grew up.
Yeah.
And oh, I don't. What? Why are you here? I'm so sorry you had to go through this. I think as far as like cute kids, she does fine. They don't ask her to do a whole bunch, and she's there for like 10 minutes and she's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I also like, you know, Ann Archer is good.
Yeah.
She's his wife.
Yeah. She is really good as Catherine Ryan in this. She's a good foil for Jack. So
yeah, they're seeing their relationship just play out. It's like I think it's written solidly.
Yeah.
And he's more stoic, whereas she's a bit more chippy, I guess, to balance him out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, again, I really like how Patriot Games opens with, you know, he's on the phone just kind of like, hey, can you get a new fish in case the old one died? And they're just playing Monopoly together. Yeah. It establishes right from the beginning, this is what the focus of it is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good way to also like differentiate how he's going to play the character differently than Alec Baldwin did. And the way that Alec Baldwin played it was great as well. Like, I think he's great. He's amazing in that movie. It's just, we don't learn a lot about him in it, I think Alec Baldwin does a lot. He comes across a lot more as like an analyst or a nerd.
Yes.
Than I think Ford ever could.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, apparently Harrison Ford was the first choice. Was their first choice for Hunt for Red October, but he turned it down because he thought it focused too much on the Marco Ramius character and not enough on Jack Ryan.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, I understand. Like, if I was told I'm going to be starring as Jack Ryan and I read that script, I'm like, I mean, yeah, I'm in it, but
yeah.
This Sean Connery, the world's most convincing Russian, is the main character, not me. Yeah, sorry. Sean Connery in that he's great, but he's not Russian.
I mean, I respect the fact that he's at least not really trying to do a Russian accent. I mean, he just keeps with his Scottish, natural Scottish accent, and it's like, okay, I'm fine with this. Yeah.
It's a great movie. It dinged me for like 5 or 10 minutes, and then I got used to it. Like, look, I would much rather him use his normal speaking voice than attempt to combine it with a Russian one.
Oh yeah, it would have been unlistenable.
Like, yeah, like if he had tried to do a Russian accent, it would have been like, kept back to Jack Ryan immediately.
Yeah, exactly. No.
The How Red October Goes is definitely more about like this building the suspense, and again a lot of the like behind the scenes stuff of what goes on in between government operations and missions and stuff like that. Like, how do we get things moving?
Yeah,
just showing us all of that. Mm-hmm. Whereas the two Harrison Ford ones are, you know, Predator Games is more of a small scale personal story, and Women in Danger is a wider ranging, like, political one. Like, they're all suspenseful, but they're just
right.
They emphasize different things, and it makes them it makes each of them distinct, which I really, really like.
No, I agree with that. And I think what's kind of interesting, I mean, admittedly, it's been a while since I've seen some of All Fears and Shadow Recruit, the Chris Pine one. And I've never watched the John Krasinski series on Prime.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's interesting because of the fact that I don't know that I would say that any of the performances, any of the actors were necessarily bad choices for the role. Like I said, it's been a while since I've seen some of All Fears, so I'm not sure how I'd feel about that. But given the type of story that they're doing with that, it makes a little bit more sense that he would be the choice.
Yeah, and I think Ben Affleck is... I think Ben Affleck is okay.
Yeah.
They're like, as a younger version of him, he's fine. I think it helps a lot that he has Morgan Freeman to work off of.
Yes.
Through most of that, because Morgan Freeman is just the better of the two at that time. Mm. And not that Morgan Freeman ever got bad, but like Ben Affleck got better.
Yes.
As time went on. The fact that Ben Affleck is so young and not really the way he's written in that story is not knowing how anything works. I think Affleck is well chosen for that, and then he messes up, and then he slowly learns as he goes into it. And you know, I think it would have been interesting had they made another Ben Affleck one like they intended to. Like, it was supposed to be a total reboot with Ben Affleck spearheading it.
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, I think it underperformed financially and the critic reviews were mixed because of the time it was released, which I understand. And so they didn't do anymore. It would have been interesting to see if Ben Affleck could have grown like, if he would have, or just how different his career would be if he had done another Jack Ryan movie.
Yeah. No, it would have been interesting because, I mean, it was at that point in time where Hollywood was basically putting Ben Affleck in as much as they could. I mean, he was in that role. He was in that period of his career after he blew up with Good Will Hunting and Kevin Smith's films and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, and Armageddon and all of that. So it were basically throwing him at everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was in like 2002, and then his 2003 was insane. He was like, that was the year of, I believe Paycheck was that year.
Yep.
And Geely and Daredevil.
Yeah.
Back to back to back. I have not seen Geely out of choice. I can defend those other two movies as being like fun to watch, not necessarily great, but like I enjoy Daredevil mostly due to major nostalgia, which and Paycheck, which I think is loopy enough to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Also John, just the way that John Woo handled that was like when I saw John Woo, I rewatched it and it was one of those that like they showed on TV all the time and I didn't fully get when I was 12 or whatever. But then I rewatched it a couple years ago, and I'm like, oh, John Woo is putting style all over this.
Yeah.
We're fine. Oh, we're fine.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, and I think, you know, to kind of bring it back to the 90s in particular, I mean, I do think, you know, I think depending on what you want out of the character, it kind of depends on how you view all of the actors who played them, right?
Yeah, yes.
And I think for me, being somebody who grew up with Han Solo and Harrison and Indiana Jones and all that stuff, it's like, I think to a certain extent, it's like I resonate more towards the Harrison Ford Jack Ryans because I am a Harrison Ford fan and I like what he brings to that type of role, these type of roles. And so him being in this, and then in the middle, he had The Fugitive, which, you know, just was one of the biggest non-indie, non-Star Wars hits of his career. It's just one of those things where, I mean, I just really connect with his personality more than I do any of these other actors.
I agree. I think every actor who's played Jack Ryan has brought a little bit of their own, like, of, they've been lucky enough to cast actors who all have a very distinctive screen presence to them and a very distinctive kind of personality that they bring.
Yeah.
And I think Harrison Ford, I think, does the best job at bringing like this kind of masculinity, but also emotional vulnerability to him, where it's like, he looks good in the action scenes, but he also is really good at handling the dramatic aspects of this.
Mm-hmm.
So again, he just feels like, I feel like Ford's Ryan feels like the most well-rounded iteration of the character.
Yeah.
From what I've seen. And I saw the first season of the John Krasinski show. I thought it was entertaining enough, like not exactly memorable, but it was like, it was fine. It was a fine, like, action political show. And the Chris Pine one, Shadow Recruit, Kenneth Branagh should not have played the villain role at all. I don't think that movie knows who it's trying to be for.
Mm-hmm.
It comes across like, oh, we got that dude who's hot from the Star Trek movies, so the young people will come in. But the story is all about crashing the world financial market, so the 50-year-old guys will come in. And you're like, but 50-year-old men don't care who Chris Pine is.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's like, I mean, I understand he was just coming off of Thor, but it's like,
yeah,
why was Kenneth Branagh your choice to
direct that? Like,
to direct that? That's not really,
and
it's not and really then, like what he does.
I remember this like from the director of Thor, where even at the time when Thor came out, people were like, "Oh, it's fine." Like it's entertaining. Like it was a fine movie.
Yeah.
But like it wasn't a huge, I don't think it was a huge like, oh man, everybody saw it, everybody loved it. Like it wasn't the kind of movie where I would say, oh, hire this director on our sort of workmanlike action script here to elevate it up. And I think his direction on it is good, other than himself, but it's like other than himself, I think the direction of the movie and all the actors in it is fine.
Yeah.
Like Kevin, I think Keira Knightley's American accent holds up surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Costner is Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
I prefer James Earl Jones and Morgan Freeman considerably more. I like Kevin Costner as an actor, but I feel like he didn't bring enough personality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, I remember, like, Shadow Recruit ends, like, we're going to get a sequel, you guys, right? I'm like, No. I mean, I own all five of them, so I get enjoyment out of each of these.
Right.
And again, for what Chris Pine brings to it, I think that Chris Pine does a good job of, like, again, an even younger interpretation of him. Like, he's really, really green. Like, yeah. there's a really great scene after he had to, like, kill a guy in a bathroom where he calls his handler on the phone and is panicking and freaking out. Like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? You need to wait. Yeah, just the frustration and, again, just panic of that. He does a good job. Like, yeah, this is the first time you've ever had to kill somebody out in the field. You're just used to being an analyst at your desk, and now you have to be in the action. But yeah, I think it's great that Harrison Ford can say that he's played three of the most iconic action heroes.
Yeah.
Like he's done Jack Ryan, Indiana Jones, and Han Solo, and made all of them feel different from each other.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, just as we get to the point of wrapping this up, I do want to bring it back to Patriot Games and Clint Present Danger. Just a couple of things that we haven't gotten to yet that we've talked about, that we haven't talked about. That you've mentioned to a certain extent some of the depth in the cast. Like you mentioned Samuel L. Jackson being in Patriot Games. We'll also get Richard Harris in Patriot Games as an IRA spokesman.
Yeah. Yes.
Ted Raimi is in these movies as one of the analysts.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like as one of the computer nerds. And
yes.
It's just absolutely fantastic to see all of these characters in this movie, in these movies.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's, and again, I think it's just interesting to watch these now, where we don't really, I know that like every film critic ever has been ballyhooing this off of Pride Rock the past 5 years, but we don't really get like action movies like these anymore. No. They're just kind of mid-budget, very star-driven things that are aimed at adults.
Yeah.
I mean, we get some, but it's not like every other week, oh, we've got a new $45, $60, $70 million star movie coming out for, you know, for your parents to go and see.
Right.
And even the ones, and even when they do make that, like, you know, Fly Me to the Moon is out right now.
Yeah.
And my parents went to go see that. I went to go see it, and the elderly people in my theater went to go see it. But, you know, I don't know how many more of those we're going to get this year.
Right.
And if they made more Jack Ryan movies now, they'd probably go to like Amazon or something.
Yeah, it would be, I was thinking about that. It'd be difficult, I think, to really, because of how chaotic things in the real world politics are now, it'd be very difficult to do a Jack Ryan type movie nowadays because of the fact that I don't know how it would compare to what we see in real life. I think it would be very difficult to do a movie like this now.
And I don't know what you even have the story be, because so much insanity has happened in the world in the past several years, where it's like anything you come up with is gonna be compared to something that's happened in the real world that's even nuttier.
Yeah, exactly.
And would it be considered entertaining at this point by enough people? I mean, I would go for it, because I'm like, all right, I like these kinds of political thrillers and stuff, but like, would enough people want to be entertained by a politically tinged story at this point, when all of real world politics is kind of insane?
Yeah. No, exactly. No, I mean, absolutely. And the one last thing I do want to mention is the score in both of these. The wonderful music by James Horner. I absolutely... This was where I really started to take notice of him as a composer, and I just absolutely adore his... Even now, I just love his scores for Patriot Games and Clear Present Danger. He was such a good choice for both of these.
Yeah, I agree. The music in these does a really... The music in these does a lot of the heavy lifting. You know, I think the score is quite varied. Like, you've got like the action cues, you've got the softer emotional cues going on, and they know when not to play music as well.
Yeah.
I think it's a really well balanced score. It just fits all the scenes where it's present really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I noticed James Horner as a composer until he did Avatar.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was 14 years old at the time when that came out. So I would have been just getting into people who make these things. Yeah, I think Avatar was the first score where I really noticed him. And then I've gone back and listened and seen more movies that he did. Oh, no, he was really great.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. These two movies in particular, I mean, we've touched into a lot of different aspects of the Jack Ryan movies, and it's weird because you can't really consider it's a franchise, but it's not really a franchise because there have been so many different versions. It's kind of like James Bond in that way, where because so many people played the character, doesn't necessarily have a strict continuity to it, but I think that's actually
a strength of these movies, like all of them, is that you could turn any of them on, and because they're so standalone and not concerned with continuity across multiple movies, like you could watch any one of them without knowledge of the previous ones and still get an entertaining time.
Yeah.
I think that makes them very refreshing now. Like, oh, I didn't have to remember everything from Hunt for Red October to understanding the Clear and Present Danger.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Nice.
Exactly.
And again, like two of these five are attempted reboots. So you would just, if they had had continuity, you would have scrubbed them anyway.
Yeah.
But it's like, but yeah, I think that both of these have largely held up because they're good scripts, they're very well cast actors, and their stories are very well executed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And I think I'm pretty much done with everything I really wanted to say about these. Kevin, before we go, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and occasionally Threads. My Facebook is Kevin the Critic. Twitter is @Kevin_the_critic. Instagram, Kevin the Critic, all one word. And you can find my film review blog, KevinTheCritic.com, with links to all of those pages, as well as my full written reviews of new movies.
Excellent. Well, Kevin, thank you once again for joining me. It's always great to talk to you. And I really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to thank Kevin for once again joining me and having a good discussion with about a character that, it's funny because I've never really looked at myself as a big Jack Ryan character, as a big Jack Ryan fan, but I think it's the way the character's been played was kind of interesting, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to do this, plus talking about Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, which I really, really enjoy. That's going to be it for this episode of the Sonic Cinema Podcast. I am looking forward to more of the discussions we'll have coming up here, and once again, wherever you click subscribe, rate, and review, listen to podcasts, please do check us out at patreon.com/SonicCinema and also at www.sonic-cinema.com. Thank you very much.